Owners meetings, NFL. Key Biscayne, Florida. Some of the things that were decided, a little weird. They declared who's going to host the 2023 draft, but they're not ready to do the 2022 draft.
That was really interesting right there, right?
Vegas has got it next year. That was already set. Cleveland gets it in 2021.
Cleveland.
That could be crazy.
Rocks.
As the way everybody talked about Nashville doing well, that Cleveland! Could be insane. Kansas City is having a major anniversary, and I don't remember what it is. I forget. So they got it at 2023. But the commissioner said there's about 20 teams that want it for 2022, and we're not ready to make a recommendation yet. So I don't even know if Phoenix is one of those cities. I would love to see what we could do with it. But that was decided. A lot of other things. I think you heard a lot about the pass interference yesterday. But then there is
Nick Bosa clutching his hamstring.
Yeah, that was not part of the owners' meetings, actually.
Oh, I see.
That's part of Doug's draft meetings,
Ron
actually.
Ron Wolfley reporting Nick Bosa clutching his hamstring yesterday.
Why do you laugh? I tried to tell
all
you.
All I want to know, hey, Nick, the only thing I want to know, could you go? Could you go? That's what I want to know right there.
Could you
go on Sunday?
Oh, he'll easily be good, ready to go for a week.
Though you tweaked it on Tuesday.
Then there is something else that happened.
Our focus has been an awful lot on the game, as you all know. I think you had a briefing from Troy and Rich on competition committee this morning. I'm happy to take any questions on that. But our focus has obviously been on improving the game on the field, of course. Our efforts to continue to protect our players and make sure that we're doing everything in health and safety. And third, and probably as important issue is at the game itself, is how we engage with our fans, how we give our fans the opportunity to engage with that.
So you heard him drop in there a little bit of, you know, the safety and the things that they are doing. And one of them is a list of drills that they now are recommending that you do not do. The catch is they're recommending it to the competition committee.
I think when you go back and you look just at the spring between eliminating the blindside box to now eliminating and prohibiting certain drills that go on in camp, when we looked at some of the data, we made a significant decrease in concussions this year in the regular season. It was close to 29%, or excuse me, it was 29%, close to 30%. But we still saw a certain area in the beginning of training camp that we thought we can still make greater improvement on. And I think removing some of these drills across all 32 teams is the right way to do that.
Yesterday, I got to tell you, Basin Arnians, when this news came down, I was forlorn. It's the only word I can use. Morose inside me.
As you would say, pull back the curtains. We had the greatest show meeting we've ever had.
What do you mean?
Just to sit in a show meeting and you still being angry about a topic an hour later was awesome.
Honestly, it was just stunning to me. The football universe weeps this morning. The game is in a state of flux. I've been talking about this for over a year. The game is in a state of flux. And this story is Exhibit Z. Not A, Z. There's so many examples. For the last two or three years, I've been telling you the biggest change in football is not found in the new rule changes, but in how you prepare a human being to play in a football game. And not having Oklahoma drills, blitz pickup drills, bull in the ring drills is even more proof of this truth. You know what's so interesting about it, ladies and gentlemen? Bill Belichick was my head coach, right, when I played for the Browns in 92 and 93. He once said the drill, the Oklahoma drill, quickly answers three questions. Three questions. Number one, who's a man? This is Bill Belichick. Number one, who's a man?
Number two,
who's tough?
You can't handle the truth.
I think you'd like that one. Absolutely.
And number three.
Number three.
Who's going to hit somebody? This is not a screamer or a yeller, Bill Belichick, ladies and gentlemen. He's not. This is a guy, though, who recognizes what that drill is all about. We're going to find out who's a man. He started with that. Bill doesn't get out there. I've never heard Bill Belichick say that to a team. Say that to a group of defensive linemen or offensive. Never heard him say it. For him to say it, we're going to find out who's a man, who's tough, and who's going to hit somebody. That tells you how critical that drill has always been to the game of football.
And I'm assuming you'll be able to verify this better, but if you're a fan of the game, you watch an NFL films, you watch exclusive video from a locker room, and when you hear guys giving great speeches, you assume that guy's the leader. And yet, I would have to imagine who wins Oklahoma drills.
Oh, the respect.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, my goodness.
It doesn't matter how many stats that guy gets or how much fans know that guy. A leader in the locker room is probably a guy who wins an Oklahoma drill.
It is all about the profile, your profile in that locker room right there. And the way you increase your profile is to drive another dude into the ground and do it with malice, period. It doesn't matter what drill you're doing. Who kicks whose butt, period. That's the way. Yeah, for a quarterback, it's a completely different thing. For a kicker, it's a completely different thing. For a wide receiver, it's really different. For 80% of the guys on the field, football is about physically whipping the guy in front of you, Douglas. That's what it's about, and you know that. Football is a game of driving your opponent into the ground and doing it with malice. The only saving grace of all of this, and I mean all of this, the only saving grace is this, and it calmed me down considerably yesterday. Oklahoma's still going to happen in a game. It's still going to happen in a game. It's you can't take that away from the blood sport. You can't do it. It's still going to happen in a game, right?
The only
thing that calmed me down yesterday was that.
I can't wait to see what's going to happen to the first team who does it. I mean, this is a recommendation from the owners of the NFL that you will not do this. And as of right now, there is no punishment for doing it. There's no hard and fast rule for doing it. But they will be monitoring all practice tapes. They will be monitoring your training camp practice tapes. Okay, what if somebody does it? What's going to happen? Are you going to lose a draft pick? Are you going to have a lower salary cap?
Well, if it's a recommendation, they can't bring anything down.
Or that's just rule number one. We recommend it in 2019, and as soon as somebody doesn't follow our recommendation,
okay,
it becomes a rule in 2020. Like, where do you go when somebody says, we're running this drill?
Tell me this quickly before we go to the not-so-beautiful part of the program right here. When you see this, why do you think the NFL is doing this? Why do you think they're doing it now? Why do you think the NFL is actually doing this? And do you think teams are actually going to follow it? Because I don't. What's amazing about it is it does not appear on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
The story. This is a big story.
Yeah.
Does not appear. Does not appear on NFL.com. My brother Craig knew nothing about it when I got home yesterday. Literally said, Craig, what do you think? They're ruining our game.
I am not a Patriots.
Craig said, what are you talking about?
I'm not a Patriots fan, but I'd love to see the first day of hitting and New England opens up with an Oklahoma drill.
Oh,
just
that's
to say,
be, oh my
NFL,
goodness,
this is our opinion.
Be interesting.
And they would do it. Coming up next, if the Suns have a chance at a position of need to get a Hall of Famer, is that a no-brainer? You go do it. Or is it the worst thing they could do? There's an opportunity, and the NBA's talking about it. It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You know, there are some things that, no matter who you ask, you just don't know the truth unless you know. And I'm going to put this subject matter squarely on the shoulders of Chris Paul this morning. Chris Paul seems to be one of the guys, I don't want to say misunderstood, but there's a lot of different opinions about Chris Paul. We all know one of the greatest floppers of all time. Only Manu Ginobili really beats him out on being the number one flopper of all
time.
Man,
I can't take that.
And I hate flopping.
I
I'm with you.
I cannot stand it.
But when it comes to, and I love Mike D'Antoni, but oh my gosh, is he brutalizing the game. The guy that revolutionized the game of basketball is now brutalizing the game. When you have a point guard as good as Chris Paul and your offense is, Chris, don't handle the ball, stand over here in this corner. James, you hold it for 20 seconds and then shoot. Mm-hmm. And that's the amount of offense right now that the Rockets have. It's disgusting. And I would have to assume Chris Paul is thinking, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. Now, I'm not making him out to be 10 years ago. I realize he's not a young man. But when you have a point guard need and you're the Suns and you've got a guy that's a Hall of Famer out there, do you want him? And I don't really know the answer to that question. I'd like to be an opinionated guy. I like to know the answer. I like to tell you what I think. But Chris Paul is such a different type of animal that it's so hard, because usually the great point guards are all about everybody else. And it does appear that Chris Paul, even when assisting, can be about himself. And I don't know whether he fits or not, but I'm interested. Who cares what I think when it's the number one rumor that was coming out of Chicago?
What can the Rockets do? Was a popular topic at the Combine, too. And, like, okay, so Zach, or whoever, where can you trade Chris Paul? Is anyone going to take Chris Paul? And the two answers that were common were, one, are if the Lakers strike out and everyone, can LeBron trick the Lakers into trading for Chris Paul against their own long-term viability? Two, Phoenix.
Two, Phoenix.
Phoenix is the number two team. In the Combine's mind, in Combine rumors. That's Zach Lowe from his podcast. And then after saying that, he then drops the hammer.
My universal response was, if Phoenix is so dumb as to trade anything of value for Chris Paul, Chris Paul's a great player. He's just in his mid-30s, declining in constant risk of leg injuries. On a
and
team
about
that
crossed the $40 million a year barrier between 20 and the 2020.
Making an enormous amount of money for a team that is miles away from doing anything significant. And everyone's response was, Zach, you're talking about the Suns. Are you really sure they wouldn't do it?
Oh, my goodness, right there. Right, I what's your reaction to that, Chris
there's,
Paul?
There's so
Chris
much
Paul,
there.
Do you want Chris Paul, Basinonians? What's your reaction?
There's so much in this little nugget of information there. Number one, I think we know NBA salaries are pretty crazy, but just to have it hit me in front of me, when whoever it was else that was on Zach Lowe's podcast and said when he's about to pass the $40 million plateau, I said, well, what is it? Okay, wait a minute. So I had to look it up. Next year, Chris Paul makes 38 and a half. 2020, 2021, 41. And the last year of the contract isn't until the end of the middle of the year in 2022. And he's got 44 million. So he still has $124 million coming to him over the next 3 years.
Okay, there you go.
And that probably answers the question.
How about Mike Conley? Where's Mike Conley on that right there? Because I know he's getting paid a boatload of cash as well. I think it's $32 million. Don't hold me to that, ladies and gentlemen. But at least he's 31. He's not 34.
You're a pretty impressive. He coming up next year, he will make 32. And then 2020, 2021, he'll make 34 and a half.
How does that stinking number sit in my head? And I can't tell you, ladies and gentlemen, how many pieces of toast I had over the last. It's just incredible. Now, listen, the question comes. It's a great question. There's no doubt about it. Chris Paul, I think a lot of people would say Chris Paul would really help a lot of the young guys on the Suns. I don't see that as a fit. I don't see it as a fit in any way, shape, or form going forward right now. They need to, I'd almost take a guy that was half as experienced, half as talented, and with a salary that's half as much as Chris Paul. Do you want a guy that is a veteran? There's no doubt about it. You want a guy that is a veteran. You want to bring this guy in, a guy that's got some kind of experience whatsoever, and then hopefully be able to develop a point guard of the future. You want that. I get that and understand that. Ja Morant is not going to be out there for the Phoenix Suns.
You sound like Patino. Ja Morant is not walking through that door.
That's exactly right.
I still haven't accepted that.
I know that, but to sit there and think, you know what, the Suns could work a deal for John, it's not going to happen.
This is, now give me a little room because this is off the top of my head, and this is going back a decade here, so I could easily butcher this. But I think the timeline works that Monty Williams would have been in New Orleans when Chris Paul was. And
really?
That's an interesting little dynamic, because there's nothing Monty Williams can do that can suddenly make $44 million fit under the salary cap. But we all know how awful the point guard situation is for the Suns, and how we can't sit here and waste all of Devin Booker's time, because we're about right there in the prime now. I mean, it's crazy to think this is going into year five of Devin Booker's career.
Yes.
And please, God, don't send me the tweet that says anything about Michael Jordan. But it wasn't until year seven that Michael Jordan won a title. I might be off and it was year six. But we all think Michael Jordan's the greatest, and I'm one of those people that think he's the greatest. But we just think he walked onto a court and won championships. He didn't win his first championship till about year seven.
That's a great point.
So we're right now entering this time where you look at Devin Booker, and if you agree, he will be a superstar if you put pieces around him. How much longer do we wait for the piece? Chris Paul,
I just don't know if Chris Paul's the right. I mean, he's 34 years old. He's going to be 35, if I'm not mistaken, before next season.
Do you want to be paying a 37-year-old point guard $44 million in 2 years?
Especially when the legs are getting a little rickety right there. You heard Zach Lowe actually talk about that. The legs are getting rickety, and he's right. Now, I just don't think at this point that does nothing for me.
Now, I found it interesting because it was combine talk. Bobby Marks, the ESPN insider for NBA front offices, was on Burns and Gambo yesterday. I liked what he said, but it was painful. How do you get cap room? Because for some reason, the Suns are young without a lot of cap space.
I think you look at what you want to do with Kelly Oubre. Are you comfortable bringing him back? He's a restricted free agent. You know, his cap hold is, you know, 9 and change. So that's one decision there that would, you know, see that number increase to, you know, 16, 17 million. Of course, there's Josh Jackson, you know, with his salary. Have you lost patience with him, you know, going into year three here, especially the inconsistency, the off-court transgression from a couple weeks ago? That's another option there. I think you look at the Tyler Johnson contract. I know where it is at, you know, 19 and a, you know, half million, but is there a team out there like Atlanta that would take him and probably maybe that Milwaukee pick that you own from the Bledsoe trade?
Man, it's just a tough proposition all the way around, but Chris Paul is not going to fix it, in my opinion.
Coming up next from the Action Community Studios, worst to first, the Cardinals, a sleeper team in 2019, and you'll never guess who said it. It's coming up next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Fine folks at the NFL.com do things a little differently in this world. As I was the complete subject of clickbait last night, as we call it in the business.
Really?
In which I saw an article, and as soon as I saw the headline, I'm thinking, ooh, okay, I'll play your little game here.
Come on, Doug, you're better than that.
The article said, worst to first, the sleeper teams of 2019. And it listed, it showed 8 teams. As you can imagine, there are 4 divisions and 2 conferences. So 8 teams that finished in last place. Those were your choices. And which one of these teams do you say is a sleeper team for 2019?
Who will be the 2018 Bears worst to first?
Surprise!
They had 5 people that were part of the panel that would choose who they thought was going to be the worst to first.
Bears are who we thought they were.
And as you can imagine, Paul and I are on one side of the world. Wolf is on the other, in which we, as people in the media who have played limited amounts of football at the junior high or high school level, want to continually show, hey, we can handle ourselves when we're talking football. So I'm reading this intrigued because they have 3 media type people, 2 players.
I mean, Doug, okay. I'll bust out my game film against Gunderson High School. Don't make me.
The David Carr player representative went with the New York Jets.
Nobody cares, Paul.
Sean O'Hara went with the Jaguars. And I would, if you care, I would have gone with the Jaguars too, as if I got to choose who's going to be a sleeper, because anybody who plays in the AFC South is always a sleeper because that whole division is terrible.
And then there's my domination of Pioneer High School.
Then there's the 3 guys that were kind of media guys. Adam Rank went with Jaguars.
Nobody cares about 8-man football.
Lincoln High School had it coming.
I went, I don't know who Adam Rank is. So I looked him up, and he has been their fantasy guru. Okay, thanks. Then there was Jeremy Bergman. Jeremy Bergman went with the Jaguars. I don't know who Jeremy Bergman is.
Jeremy.
So I clicked on his NFL.com link to learn about Jeremy Bergman, right. And it says that he's been gracing us as a writer for NFL.com by day and an Uber driver at night.
I see, right. You want to see my pick six against Santa Teresa High School?
Yes, that's exactly what it says.
There we go.
That's exactly what it says. So I'm not staring down any of you.
Come on.
Any of you who are Uber drivers, I look at you and I say, God bless you, because here's you looking at a way, how can I do something for my family to be able to get extra money? Yeah. It's amazing. Anybody who has second jobs, I say that's America.
I love Uber.
But I'm not using your Uber driving as something to put on your NFL.com page to show your football knowledge while riding.
I mean, the
is
Mets,
that fair?
The Mets MVP last night was the Uber driver that took Rajay Davis Lehigh Valley to the Mets game for that home run in the eighth.
And then we have
Crook.
Then we have Marcus Grant. Marcus Grant. This is what the write-up was on Marcus Grant. Not to mention, he also will write a handful of analysis and opinion columns on NFL.com.
Gotcha.
Oh, no.
That's the highlight for the one guy who says our Arizona Cardinals are the team that will be the sleeper of 2019, a guy who's earned the right to, quote, not to mention have a handful of analysis and opinion columns at NFL.com.
Well, you know what Marcus Grant does?
He has to keep proving himself every day.
Marcus Grant proves
it
every day.
He has to keep proving himself every day.
And today's quality.
If you've got to say every day, that means you don't do it every day.
Wolf, just move.
If you've got to say every day, it means you don't do it every day.
Accept it and move on. Marcus Grant has to that the Cardinals will be the team that goes from worst to first. Is that what I'm understanding, Doug? I got a little sidetracked there.
The headline is about worst to first, but none of the writers are playing along as if you're actually predicting them. They're just saying who's going to be a sleeper. Then get to determine what a sleeper truly is.
I was going to say, can we define sleeper? What does that mean? Surprise, they win twice as many games as they did last year?
Let's set it there.
Games?
Who's the last place team that will be above 500?
Oh, okay.
I'm making that up. That's not what they said.
Above 500. You know, that is a surprise right there. Could the Arizona Cardinals get to 500? Yeah, I think they could. I think their defense is really going to. You want to talk about surprise? I think their defense is going to surprise with Vance Joseph going back to the 3-4. Don't get
now, wait, this was your opinion last week.
What?
That the defense would surprise.
Yes, absolutely.
Why is it still your opinion after Pat P?
Well, just because
I feel like I'm a wolf.
He's going to play in 10 games, too.
I see.
He's going to play in 10 games, right? And I get it. Yeah, you're going to miss him for six of those games, but I do like what they've done at the corner position with Robert Alford, bringing him in. I do like that an awful lot. Right now, that's going to hurt him, there's no doubt, but I think their pass rush is going to be good. I think it's going to be really good, like it wasn't the last 4 years with Chandler Jones coming off the edge. The Arizona Cardinals, one of the best pass rushing teams in the league over the last 4 years with Chandler Jones. So to me, I love T. Suggs. I love that signing. Nobody's talking about that signing. The one signing that you'll hear Steve Keim actually go to when you talk about all the free agents that they sign, Terrell Suggs. That's what he'll talk about first. He understands the impact that guy's going to have, not only schematically, not only out on the field, but, of course, inside that locker room.
Do I take solace and confidence in the fact that I do believe the Cardinals will not be dead last in stopping the run, and they will not be dead last in running the ball with David Johnson?
Yes.
So that's going to be a market improvement, there's no doubt. As for any sort of proclamations or declarations as to where they are in the standings, I really hesitate because, you know what? I was foremost amongst us getting burned last year at this time, making some sort of prediction as to how the Cardinals would fare in terms of wins and losses. And when you don't have Pat P for those first six games, and we all know what happens, if you don't get out of the gate with at least a 500 record after the first month and a half, look out. It can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you get out 2-4, dare I say 1-5, it just tends to get worse from there. When guys realize, guess what, for all intents and purposes, the season is over, then it will just compound itself, the losing. And we found that out the hard way last year. Exactly.
But again, we're talking about a column. We're talking about sleepers, mm-hmm. and that's my whole point. Define a sleeper. What is it? What do you mean? A team that wins twice as many as they did a year ago? So they win six games? Now maybe they win, what, three times as many? You're telling me they win nine games? What is a sleeper? That's, I guess, my question.
I look at predictions and things like that as we sit here and look at the future of the Cardinals. I like the word if. Tell me how many ifs there are. And when we look at the Arizona Cardinals, if a guy that's never coached an NFL practice until yesterday, in a sense, does well, if a rookie quarterback who has 1 year of college starting experience does well, if David Johnson is truly David Johnson, when I know all of us don't want to admit this, we haven't seen David Johnson in 3 years do something. If an injury-packed offensive line who's never played one down as a group of five human beings comes together and gels, if three rookie wide receivers learn the offense and actually is able to produce, if we have a defense that is able to handle the loss of Patrick Peterson, if they don't go 1-5 and check out mentally without Pat P, then we've got some. That's too many for me to be excited about.
If you're saying in a roundabout way the Cardinals lead the league right now in unknowns, you'd be right.
Oh, yeah.
If there was a power poll of unknowns, the Cardinals would be number one, from the quarterback to the system to the head coach, to the absence of Patrick Peterson, to the offensive line, to the former All-Pro running back, to virtually every spot on the defense, not named Chandler Jones. Yes, they do lead the league in unknowns, so you're going to see a whole wide range of predictions, from sleeper team to possible surprise team to dead last again. The predictions are going to be all over the board as you head into August.
Yeah, the defense is going to be so interesting to watch, though. I mean, I kid you not, based on earnings, with Robert Alford, T. Suggs, Jordan Hicks, and DJ Swearinger. Those four additions right there. We're talking about starters that are going to make a difference if they stay healthy.
Coming up next, is it all falling apart for the Diamondbacks? I actually have something that might give you hope. Next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Free Tomas?
All right, there's no way to hide it, no way not to talk about it. The Diamondbacks stink. I mean, hide it all you want, try to spin it positive. The Diamondbacks stink, and it is hard for us to get out of the way of the stench as they lose 5-2 yesterday. Another pathetic performance of the offense. I went through then and I looked at some numbers which will really scare you, and it's the May batting averages of everybody, okay? And Wilmer Flores is not currently playing, and he's at 347 in May. Carson Kelly's at 333.
Yeah.
Okay? And David Peralta's at 294. Surprisingly good for May.
David.
So there's your May for them. Marte had two hits yesterday. He's up to 273, but he was at 253.
Yeah.
Every other player is below 250, and some of them get even more disastrous. And here's what's worse, is the fact that some of them are 100 points off of their April average.
Mm.
And I'm actually going to try to present this to you. And again, what did I just say first? They stink. But I'm going to try to present this to you in a strange positive way, that maybe this team is a slightly above 500 or a 500 team. And when we were looking at a team that got up to about six games above 500 at one point, you're looking at a team where everybody's hot. Now they're a disaster and everybody's cold. Neither of which is normal in baseball. It's not normal for your entire team to be hot at the same time and your entire team to be cold at the same time.
Correct.
And Adam Jones in this series made a lot of outs, but they started to get to be hard outs. Marte, two hits yesterday. Escobar, still terrible, but starting to pick it up. He's batting 247 this month, but a couple games where the ball's getting hit hard. All I'm suggesting to you is I don't think they're as bad as May shows. Unfortunately, it's clear they're not as good as April showed. But at least this isn't normal to have seven guys in a major slump.
Yeah. This is, where do you begin on this? I'm sorry. These next 10 games, as I said, right, we were talking about that. The harbinger of sorrows or the harvester of sorrows. What was it going to be for the Diamondbacks? These three series that they had against subpar, sub-500 teams that were in their division.
That's the killer.
You're talking about the Padres, the Giants, of course, and the Rockies. This 10-game road trip right here was going to go a long, long way in determining maybe the future of the Arizona Diamondbacks and whether or not they were going to be competitive, whether or not they were going to be a 500 team or better than a 500 team, right? They're 0-3 right now on this divisional tone setter, and that's what it is, a tone setter. Sound the division bell. High hopes, please. The bats have gone just silent. The Diamondbacks have lost 5 in a row now, scored 7 runs in their last 4 games. And this stat is alarming. It continues to grow. They've only scored 3 runs or more only 5 times in their last 16 games now. 16 games. It's now they're 500. Straight up 507 back of the Dodgers.
Hello, Charlie. Is that Charlie?
What do you mean, Charlie?
You made the reference, and you ended the song too early.
Oh, so you're the division bell.
That's the end of the division bell. I don't know why he says that. I've never figured that out.
Of course, an awesome album, ladies and gentlemen. An album. Don't call it a record.
I'm just saying maybe a little bit. But at the same time, you do look at what Mike Hazen told us yesterday, and you have to ask the question, if everybody's in the middle of a slump, doesn't that mean that you should be doing something about it as a general manager?
How to fix it? I think, honestly, I know there's, we talked too about how we could round out the edges and the guys that are performing in AAA and how do you fit some of those performances onto your team. My argument is, you know, 1-7 in our lineup or innings 1-7 against starting pitching is where these games are being lost in a lot of cases, that we need to get the main cogs in our lineup going on a more regular basis in order to fix it.
Well, you might not know. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, can I say in order to fix it right now, stop and think about this. 3 things I might offer, ladies and gentlemen, in order to fix what is going on right now. You need to fix David Peralta. Start there. David Peralta needs to get healthy again. Whatever's going on with his trap, David Peralta, to me, is such a catalyst. I realize he's hitting .294 in May, but David Peralta has been up and down, period. Not like he was in April, right? So get David Peralta healthy. That's number one towards fixing the problem. Find a number 5 guy that you can count on, right? Zach Godley obviously is struggling still. Going to be in the bullpen, okay. But they need to find that number 5 guy and settle on somebody. And number 3, Archie. Get Archie right. Last outing for Archie, very, very encouraging. Get him right.
I like his point, though. Isn't that interesting? The top 1-7 are the problem. Innings 1-7 are the problem against starting pitchers. That's the problem. And he's looking at the minor leagues and saying, I don't see anything there of where I can give you any time. And it's easy to say we should, but there's a problem in baseball right now. AAA baseball, isn't this weird? They've been using a different baseball for years. They went to the same baseball in major leagues, and now you're seeing this huge, crazy trajectory in offensive statistics. So GMs are going, I don't know what I'm seeing. Should I believe any of this? And when you look at a Tomas, you say that's the solution, but I don't know if it translates. Take a half day with the Arizona Diamondbacks, speaking of which, and your favorite Arizona sports host coming up on June 5th. Lower level tickets, $9.87. You're going to see D-backs Dodgers, and we're going to be broadcasting live from the Four Peaks Draft Room. You went in on it, text HALF to 620-620, and you'll be able to buy as many tickets as you want for $9.87. That's HALF to 620-620. For the first time since Spike Lee and Reggie Miller, an international star is causing an international stir on the court.
What is going on? I don't know how much he's on the court. It sounds like you guys are saying more than I realize. There's certainly no place for fans and, you know, whatever.
It's a little weird, but that's Mike Budenholzer, the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, explaining that he has no, Drake has no place on the court. And now even agents of Bucks players are complaining about Drake being on the court. And why does he have the ability to give coaching massages and yell encouraging things in team huddles and antagonize players while they're on the court, and so is he.
Look, I love Drake, Basin Onions. I really do.
I've never known that.
I know. I love Drake, but Drake needs to get off the court. He's a fan. Get off the court. This guy is making games, Raptor games, about himself.
He's actually, but see, the Raptors did it. The Raptors named him the International Advocate of the Raptors a while ago. International Ambassador. So since he's the ambassador, you know, does he have diplomatic immunity?
Is he getting paid by them?
No, he's not, as far as I know.
He's a cheerleader is what he is. Why not just buy a Kawhi Leonard jersey in the team shop, put another man's name on your back, get with game ops and perform with the cheerleaders? Why doesn't he just do that? I mean, he's running up and down to me. I get it. I get what Bodes is talking about on this thing right here. How annoying is that right here?
If you haven't cracked the code of Drake yet, Drake is famous not just for his singing, but also a sidebar of openly getting so many jersey collections that he wears the jersey of whatever team he wants to wear or he wants to win. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what he does. Here's the problem. Every team he supports loses. So if you're Mike Budenholzer, don't attract attention to it. Just say this the next time any Bucks player, the next time you're asked, just say this: the worst thing Drake could do to distract us is wear a Bucks jersey, because then we know we're going to lose. That's how you handle it. Coming up next, this was interesting. One of the only players at Monty Williams' press conference was Mikal Bridges. You got to ask the question, why? What do you believe in? What are you seeing? And in return, the coach said that's one of the pieces to build on moving forward. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.